Wow, this is quite a room. And this much expectation in a room makes me feel very intimidated to step here. That is until I take a deep breath and realize it's the biscuits and not the speaker that you're here for. So that kind of helps me out. I am really, really blessed, honored, encouraged, grateful to have you in this room with us today. I just continue to be amazed at the network of friendships across generations of age and stage of life that bring us together in a moment like this. And I think that what it does more than anything else is that it really does say to us that there are men who are in need, there are men who want to grow, there are men who want to learn, and we just need a forum to do it. And that's what Men's Forum is really all about. And that's why we're here, and that's what we hope to do. And I'm very excited about these next 4 weeks that we're going to have to be together. And I have to tell you, one of my great kind of uncertainties was when we scheduled to start this the week of Labor Day. Sometimes when we do this, when we've had a Monday holiday, it seems like we have a hitch. It's a little hard to get started because everybody's a little bit off step. But I have to tell you, you guys are in step, you're on mark, you're here, and I am very, very grateful for you. And so turn to your neighbor and just say, hey, I'm glad you made it today. Let them know, let them hear from you today. All right, well, I know not all of you really meant that. You may have ended up sitting with somebody you didn't want to. But anyway, you listened, and I'm grateful. Okay. Now, maybe it's just me. Maybe this is just me. But as I stand here in front of you this morning, it seems to me that we are increasingly living in a day and a time when things that make no common sense whatsoever have become the truths and the trends of our day. Things that make no sense whatsoever have become the headlines, the highlights, the biggest points of discussion and decision making at every level in which we live. Sort of like that little pun, maybe you know the answer to this. Do you know what you call someone who has a fear of spiders? Do you know what the fear of spiders is? What do you call that? Arachnophobia. Do you know what you call someone who has a fear of chainsaws? Someone with common sense. And I think that, as Will Rogers once said, common sense ain't common. It seems that we're living in a world where common sense ain't common. And as Victor Hugo said, common sense is in spite of, not the result of, education. Sorry to all of our professors who are in the room today. W.C. Fields said, horse sense is a thing that a horse has that keeps them from betting on people. Now, I brought a screen this morning that I want you to see that is reflective of news headlines over the last 60 to 90 days. And I want you to just take a look at some of these things that have been constantly discussed and trending that are going on in our culture. And I could comment on each of them with a variety of opinions as you could as well. But no doubt about it, there seems to be this ongoing, just amazing conflict over human identity, issues of responsibility in life, all the matters that have to do with the issues of unity and disunity within society. And everywhere we look, it just seems that we have lost our senses and we have no sense of clear right or wrong, good or bad, standards of expertise and failure. We're just living in a wild and a crazy world. It was G.K. Chesterton, who was the British or the English writer, philosopher, sort of a lay theologian and literary critic, who once said this. He said, fallacies do not cease to be fallacies because they become fashions. Fallacies do not cease to be fallacies just because they become fashions. And today's distortion, in today's world, distortion has become the norm. And any suggestion of rational, moral, biological, fundamental distinction has become absolutely unacceptable in our world. It was T.S. Eliot who once decried, where is the wisdom we've lost in knowledge, and where is the knowledge we've lost in information? And I think that's one of the big questions of our day. Now, no doubt about it, the illustrations that I brought to you come from the extremes of our culture. They come from all of the things that are sensationalized and the things that get so much attention where we are today. But there's no doubt about it, we are being pushed to the extremes every day in our lives because of biases and because of bullying that is going on in the world around us. And what we have to pause and realize is that extreme choices with extreme consequences bring extreme injury and pain in life. Just a few days ago, I read an academician, an ethics professor, and an author, Andrew Walker, who said this. He said, "Today I had a first in my life. Anger after leaving a teaching opportunity. Was it because I had a bad experience? No. Because the rush of students afterwards giving me evidence confirming that our culture is destroying a generation by destabilizing and secular fixation on identity. In the name of, quote, tolerance, inclusion, live your truth, we are crushing an impressionable generation, destroying them. Government is doing it, public schools are doing it, entertainment is doing it, colleges are, media is. The system is going to come crashing down with victims. Where the church has either intentionally or unintentionally fed this monster, we should repent. But the church also has the answer to the destabilizing fictions and the fashionable fallacies of our wicked age. The most loving thing a Christian can do in our culture is tell people they are made in the image of a loving God whose Son died to deliver them from sin and the rebellion that our culture is helping to foster. Our youth need universals and objectivity. They need truth, the truth that Jesus is. We can wring our hands about waging the cultural war. I get it. It can be done wrongly. But the culture is definitely waging a war, taking captives, and has the presumption of validity and normalcy to their benefit." And then he ends with this statement by Flannery O'Connor: "Push back against the age as hard as it pushes you." Well, that's a good word. That's a prophetic word. It's a strong word that I want to share with you today. And I say this, and I have shared these sort of outrageous and extreme ideas and images that I've put in you, because the reality is that I'm speaking to a group of men today who may not in any way be living out on the edges of where the culture is going. But the truth is, many of us are harboring fallacies in our hearts, myths in our minds, that are ultimately shaping the direction of our lives. And as a result of that, many of us are following pathways of nonsense every single day. And that's why I want, over these next 4 weeks, to talk about nonsense and confronting the fallacies that destroy men's lives. Because what we question and criticize as nonsense in the culture is too often rationalized and ultimately allowed to be maintained in our own minds and in our own thoughts. So try as we may to sort through the common practices and patterns that are going on in our lives, we often are setting ourselves up for evil and for injury. It was Warren Wiersbe who said this: "The pages of history are filled with the names of brilliant and gifted people who were smart enough to become rich and famous, but not wise enough to make a successful and satisfying life." That is such a tremendous truth. And so what I want to try to address with you is, how can we make a successful and a satisfying life? How can we be done with the nonsense in us in order to find the good sense that is needed to live effectively? Well, there's a book in the Bible, the book of Proverbs, that is all written on the subject of wisdom. Everything in the book is in order to help you, to help me, to live a wise life. How we can have a satisfying life, how we can succeed, how we can rise above the fallacies of the world around us. Let me just give you a few of the statements about sense that we find in the book of Proverbs. Because often in this book, we find a big contrast between a wise man and a foolish man, wisdom and a fool. Let's just hear a few of these. Proverbs 16:22 says this: good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is their folly. Proverbs 12:8, a man is commended according to his good sense, but one of twisted mind is despised. Proverbs 13:15, good sense wins favor, but the way of the treacherous is their ruin. Proverbs 15:21, folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks straight ahead. And Proverbs 19:2, whoever gets sense loves his own soul. He who keeps understanding will discover what is good. So let me say and let me state today that there is good sense and there is nonsense, and your life depends on which sense you sense, okay? There is good sense and there is nonsense, and the outcome of your life depends on your sense of where you're going. So the book of Proverbs is in many ways the most down-to-earth book in the Bible. I've often in this gathering with men encouraged you to think about, if you've never really read the Bible, maybe just pick up and read the book of Proverbs. It's 31 chapters, so you've got basically a chapter a day for a 30 or a 31 day month. And so you can just kind of start. You could even do that starting today. It's just the eighth day of the month, so you could just pick up and start and read until you get back there again. But it's a tremendous thing to help you. I could say that a chapter of Proverbs a day will keep nonsense at bay. And it's a good way for you, for me, to be able to understand how to have a wise life. Now, Proverbs is not a rule book. It is a book that is regulatory, based upon principles that are essentials in life. Maybe you've heard that little jingle. Let me remember how it starts. Methods are many, principles are few. Methods always change, principles never do. And the book of Proverbs is a book of principles that will guide us. Now, when you enter the book of Proverbs, and this is just important for me to just to do for the sake of the credibility of the nature of the literature itself, the book of Proverbs is a book of Hebrew poetry. It was written by Solomon, the king of Israel. It has two companion books. One is the book of Ecclesiastes, the others is the book of Song of Solomon. And so Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon are all the works of this great king of Israel, this man by the name of Solomon. And when we read Hebrew poetry is not like our English poetry. English poetry is almost always based upon a rhyme. Roses are red. Can you say the rest of it? Violets are blue. Sugar is, and so, yeah, did you say that to the guy next to you? I hope you didn't. I mean, that's kind of our version of poetry. But Hebrew poetry is based upon the way in which thoughts connect and follow. Hebrew poetry is based upon a thought that complete a thought. In other words, you get the first part and then you get the rest of the thought. So it's a completive sort of line of thinking. It can also be a complementary thought where you get one idea and then it gets enlarged a little bit in the second one. I could give you illustrations of these, but I'm going to go to the third and most important of what we find in Hebrew poetry, and that is contrastive thought, where it tells you one thing is this, but the other thing is this. And really what we're going to be looking at is this contrastive type of thinking that we find as we study through the book of Proverbs over these next few days. And today, I want to take and I want to tackle something that I think is one of the most subtle myths and one of the most subtle and yet erosive realities in our lives. And that is that I want to try to tackle something that touches your work life and mine. And it is the foolish notion that more is better. More is better. It's such a simple little thought. It's such an easy little thing to adapt. This idea that if I just do more, that it's always going to mean that if I give more, it's going to be better. But I want you to know many a men's lives have been ruined because they lived with the compulsive, continual action of thinking that more is better. Everyone in life that I know wants to get better. Don't you want to be better? Yeah. But you know what we tend to think when we think about better? We think that more time in, more money invested, more energy expended is going to be the result of something better. But before long, your life is consumed by something that you're looking for more, but you're not the better because of it. You're doing more, but you're not better. And you know that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And yet men constantly seem to get caught in this pattern of more is better. So many of us believe this practice. Now, let's go back to Proverbs chapter 15. I want to give you a passage out of the book of Proverbs and see some of these contrastive thoughts, this Hebrew poetry, these contrastive thoughts that I was mentioning to you just a moment ago. Proverbs 15:18 says in this text, "A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger does what? Quiets contention." A hot-tempered man stirs up strife. I mean, you can have a flint, you can have a spark, and an explosion in a minute in a relationship. But it says, but the contrast is, he who's slow to anger quiets contention. The way of the sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. Folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding does what? Walks straight ahead. And so here in reading these verses, let me keep going. I'm sorry, I didn't quite finish. Without counsel, plans fall, but with many advisors, they succeed. You see how every one of those gives us a contrast of thought? But the critical one that I want us to focus on today is that verse 21. Folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks straight ahead. Many times in our lives, we get caught up in the folly. We get caught up in the activity. We get caught up in just going and doing and being busy. I mean, is that not the buzzword of our day, that whenever you ask people how they're doing, they say, "I'm doing great, but I'm busy. I'm busy, 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 busy." And everybody's just busy, 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 busy. And that's the way we live life. And we feel like that somehow we're validated by being busy. And if you're not busy, then you're not valid. And so that's kind of the mindset of the world in which we live. And so we want to create a lot of dust, a lot of stir, a lot of activity. We want to look as if we're connected and we're engaged and we're constantly interacting with technology, because we always want people to think that our busyness is the validity of our being. But I want to be really careful today to say, guys, that many of us are losing our lives in our busyness. And so to that end, I want to give you a few statements today that I hope will help you to address the issue of thinking that more is better and help you to adjust the direction and the trajectory of your life from here forward. So, if we're going to make sure that we break the myth and step beyond the fallacy of thinking that more is better in life, then the first thing that we have to do is understand that purpose is essential in every life investment. Purpose is essential in every life investment. It says, a man of understanding walks straight ahead. He's moving with purpose. He's not ambling. Do you ever struggle with getting in a store and you're trying to get down an aisle and you're just like, well, would you just choose one side or the other? I mean, maybe I'm just impatient, but I mean, I know what I'm going to get, and I'm in the store, and I'm trying to get there, and I got somebody who's kind of here, and they're looking there, and you know, you can't even get their attention. Do you ever get behind somebody when you're driving? They hit the gas, and they hit the brake lights, and hit the gas, and hit the brake lights, and they wander, and you're just like, would you just go? I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. Not a good admission right now with a lot of tragedies going on in that city. And as I say that today, let me especially say that some of you know and respect very much Pastor George Robertson, who was pastor of First Presbyterian Church here for many years in Augusta. He went to be the pastor of Second Presbyterian Church in Memphis. So I guess he's gotten from first to second. I don't know if he's going to third or not. But anyway, no, I'm kidding. He would appreciate me saying that. But I love George, and I just saw yesterday that this horrific tragedy that has unfolded with this young lady who was abducted and killed in Memphis, that she was a member of Second Pres. And that tells me that George Robertson will be the pastor overseeing that service and those needs. Pray for George, okay? It's a tragedy. And I just feel that in this city where a man's had great life influence, we ought to pray and just ask God to help him in these days. But that wasn't where I was talking in Memphis. I grew up in Memphis where I learned to drive. And in Memphis, green meant go and yellow meant gun it. That's what it meant. When you grew up in Memphis, that's how I learned to drive. So if I'm coming behind you and you're at a yellow light, believe me, you better get out of my way, okay? So I'm just saying, though, a lot of people just amble through life. They're in motion, but they're in motion going nowhere. And many of us do not have a clear sense of purpose and direction in our lives. Life is too precious to waste it. It was Thomas Edison who said, "Time is really the only capital that any human being has and the only thing he cannot afford to lose." Benjamin Franklin said this, "Dost thou love life? Then do not squander time, for that is the stuff that life is made of." Ask hard questions in your life. Take careful evaluation of how and what you are doing to invest your time. Because just because you spend more time and more money on a product or a project or a problem, it does not mean that it's going to get better. Frankly, sometimes it gets worse because of the way in which you have traded the best of your life for something that doesn't matter as much in life. All of life is a trade-off. Do you recognize it? Do you know that life is a trade-off? Every day you're trading off your time, your energy, your resource, your commitments, your responsibilities, your character. Every day in your life you are making a trade-off. And therefore the most important question that any man in this room can ask today is simply this question. Why? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What is the ultimate end goal of what I'm doing? And making sure that we realize from the very beginning that as this proverb tells us when it says that folly is a joy to him who lacks sense. You just kind of get involved in the activity. It's a joy to just live in the hub and the throb. But it says a man who is wise walks straight ahead. Secondly, not only do I want you to understand that purpose is essential in every investment in your life, asking yourself, marking yourself, making sure that you're maintaining a sense of a compass with purpose in your life, but secondly, recognize that perfection is often the enemy of progress. Perfection is often the enemy of progress. Now, if you are a physician or a surgeon, let me give you an exclusion clause. We expect you to be perfect. I just want you to know, if you're operating on me, you better be perfect, okay? So I'm going to exclude our physicians and our surgeons in the room. But the truth of the matter is that perfection is often the enemy of progress. And I have to tell you, this has been a challenge in my life, many levels. For one thing, I'm expected to be perfect. You know that, don't you? Everybody expects me to be perfect. I mean, I am Reverend David McKinley. And therefore, because I've got that Rev in front of my name, that Rev means I'm to be revered for perfection. No, it really doesn't. I am just a man like you are. But there are always a set of expectations in my life, how I respond, what I do, what I say, that take life to another level. And I have to always be aware that anywhere I am on any given day, at any time or moment, I may get tested for people to figure out whether or not is he who he says he is. Because most people kind of have a baloney meter about pastors in the world today. I find that we rate below, well, I won't compare with other professions like lawyers and used car salesmen. But anyway, we rate below those things. And thank you. But I put myself below you. So several months ago, I was listening to a popular leadership podcast by Craig Rochelle. I don't know how many of you know the name Craig Rochelle, how many of you know about his podcast, but I heard him make this statement because he was speaking about some of these issues, and he made this statement. He said, "The pursuit of excellence will motivate you, but the pursuit of perfection will paralyze you." The pursuit of excellence, high standards, will motivate you, but the pursuit of perfection will paralyze you. And so I know that I have some men in this room who have that perfection gene. It's not all of you. Some of you have another gene. It's not at all perfection. It's the opposite of that. And, you know, I won't go any further with that. But many of you are struggling with what I would call production corruption in your life. You have a lot of ability, you have a lot of skill, you have a lot of knowledge, but you corrupt your own productivity because of your obsession with perfection. And it's something that really can be very destructive. One of the great expectations of my life is that I would always be prepared when I stand to speak, right? I mean, you didn't get up and come this morning and think this guy's going to show up and go, well, what would you like me to talk about today? Let's just kind of, you know, I mean, that's not really very effective, right? I mean, you're expecting me to prepare. But my challenge is, what is it going to take me to prepare? Because every week in my life, I speak. I speak repeatedly. I have to prepare to speak. And depending on the number of platforms on which I speak or the number of needs that I have to meet, I have to allot time for that. And of all the things that people expect me to take time to do, the one thing they don't expect me to take time to do is to prepare. They expect me to be prepared, but nobody really likes to know how long it takes to get prepared. Now, I put about 15 minutes into this today. No, I'm kidding. No. But, you know, honestly, I really do. I have to struggle with, you know, what does it take? I have at least anywhere from 8 to 15 hours probably in every Sunday message, and I have to carve out time and find time to do that. Some weeks, depending on subject matter, it may go 20, 25 hours of time and intensive focus on that. But one of the things I have to really determine, because I do have other responsibilities, I have people to visit and meetings to have and administrative responsibilities and counseling and visits and all those kinds. And then I've got a life, you know, beyond this. I mean, you do know that. I don't live here. I may look like I live here, but I don't live here. And so I say all that to say that whenever I'm doing something, I really have to weigh out how much time should I put into this. And one of the things that I've had to learn, especially the longer I've been at it, is that there needs to be adequate time in to get the right result. But if I want every word to be just right and every thought to be just so connected, and I want this to be the quintessential kind of my ultimate speech when I make it, then if I'm not careful, I can keep putting time in to the point that I kill a good talk. You really can. It's easy to do. You can smother your very best efforts. And the way that we do that is oftentimes through perfection. And so one of the things that we have to learn in life is that since perfection is the enemy of progress, we've got to learn how to give ourselves to progress and to release ourselves from perfection. Give ourselves to a commitment to progress, but release ourselves from perfection. Peter Drucker, an author, leadership management teacher, once said this: anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. Now, you've heard the statement, anything worth doing is worth doing what? Well. Well, yeah. And there is a sense of that being right. I mean, don't be sloppy. Don't be careless. Don't have to do twice what you can do once. Yeah, there's a sense of that. But for some of us in this room, we don't need to hear the adage, anything worth doing is worth doing well. We need to hear the adage, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. Because sometimes we get so caught up in the compulsion of perfection. I found an article recently in Forbes magazine that was written by Ashley Good, where she took that statement by Peter Drucker and said, things that are worth doing are worth doing poorly. And she went on to say that that perfectionism is something that destroys us. And she identified several reasons. Number one, overthinking. When you're a perfectionist, you tend to overthink things. You process and process and you overthink it in your life. Number two, she said the result of that is procrastination. You don't do anything because you just keep waiting to have everything like you would have it. And then she talked about indecision. And of course, indecision is one of the most one of the things that in life that we really can't afford to do, because really indecision is a decision not to do anything. And so she identified that. But then in that same article that I read, she identified five reasons why anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. And this is just a little something I thought I would throw in this morning that I thought would be good for us, because I think for those of you who, like me, can lean toward perfectionistic tendencies that can be destructive, we need to know this. So here are the five things. I just want to put them up as a list for you. Number one, clarity comes from acting, or from action, not thinking. It's not just thinking about something, but it's beginning to do something that you begin to realize whether or not, am I going the wrong direction? Am I going the right direction? Have you ever tried to do your GPS navigation while sitting in the back of a parking lot and trying to figure out how to get out and where to go? And how that until you move, you can't really begin to tell, am I going this way or that way? I mean, really, one of the most frustrating things about GPS is that it will get you there once you get started in the right direction. But if you are not at first started in the right direction, you're not ever going to get going there. And so there's a sense in which we need to have some action in our lives. Secondly, creativity flows when you don't block it. Drucker said creativity is the author of innovation. And sometimes when we have a creative moment and yet we are waiting for it to kind of, if you will, flesh it all out, we kind of just, you know, put a lid on it and suck all the air out of it. Sometimes you need to go with the flow of creativity and take it and chase it a little bit. Number three, energy is created from action. Have you ever tried to start your car and you thought you did and you put it in gear and you started moving and suddenly you realize that you don't have your power steering? Have you ever had that happen to you? Now, I mean, I'm old enough to have grown up when we didn't have power steering. You know, that was another, you know, era. But all that being true, when your car's moving, you can steer it. But you can't really steer a car that's not moving. And in that same sense, we need to have energy that comes from action. Then growth comes from progress, not perfection. When you make some progress, you learn some things. You begin to understand what to do, and growth comes out of that. And then the last thing is that momentum becomes self-generating when you stay focused on the immediate next step. Momentum becomes self-generated when you stay focused on the immediate next step. Isn't that true in football? The ultimate goal is to get a touchdown. But what you really have to do is you have to get another first down and another first down and another first down. And every time you get a first down, you keep getting closer and closer to the end game, to the end goal of what you want to do. And so momentum comes through that. John Maxwell, another leadership leader, has often spoken on the subject of momentum. He says momentum is really a leader's best friend. Sometimes it's the only difference between winning and losing. You know how you can feel and see momentum in a football game, in a basketball game. You sense it among the people in the stadium, and momentum changes. Maxwell's also said that when you have momentum, you look better than you really are. And when you don't have momentum, you look worse than you really are. And so it's needed. Now, speaking of momentum, at the back table, there's a place back there with a sign that says momentum. And beyond these four Thursdays that we have together, we have an ongoing group of men that meet here on Thursday mornings. And I just want you to know, we want to help you get some momentum in your life. So I'm going to just give you guys that tag. Charlie Finch, would you just wave at everybody back there? I want you to see this friend. But just know that's another thing that we have going on. That was a good way to get a commercial in, wasn't it, on momentum? Okay. But perfection is the enemy of progress in our lives. The third thing that I would say to you this morning, if you're going to overcome the more is better, then practice the discipline of less is more. Practice the discipline of less is more. Now, the word discipline is heard in all kinds of ways. Some people hear the word discipline and they think about something that is someone who is like corporal punishment or somebody being yelled at. But discipline just means focus. And we need to learn the focus in life that less is more. Learn how to walk straight ahead. Not wandering and wasting our time and energy, but walking straight ahead, as the proverb has said to us. Have you ever been to a dessert buffet? I mean, when you go, always good to make this prayer. Lord, give me the capacity to meet my opportunity, right? I mean, that's a good prayer to pray at a dessert buffet. Really, that's a good prayer for any buffet, right? But the truth of the matter is, you've done it and I've done it. You go to that dessert buffet, you see all that stuff, you get it on a plate, and you eat about three or four bites of each thing, and the next thing you know, you're just like, whoa. You're just almost sick. It's just so much. It's so rich. And really what you realize, I'd have been better off to have had less because it would have been more, because more was not better. And that's exactly what we have to learn in life, how to discipline ourselves to make good choices, good decisions, to keep walking straight ahead, and to be able to let those things help us in life to become our best. Sometimes we need to embrace our limitations. We need to embrace the limitations of time and of money, because sometimes our limitations become the foundation of our greatest innovations. When you're limited, you have to make some changes, you have to make some adjustments, and your innovations come from your limitations. It's the old saying that necessity is the mother of invention. And when you quit trying to be excessive and you back down to necessity, then you learn how to focus and do what really needs to get done. Have you ever noticed how productive you are a day or the week before you take a vacation? You learn how to figure out just exactly what needs to be done. You don't try to do it all. There's some things you push aside. There's some things you rearrange. But there are the things you know you've got to do to be able to leave town. And you think to yourself, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to walk out the door. And you do it. And that's how we need to be able to live our lives. Brett Legg, pastoral counselor who serves here with me and who I'm inviting to maybe help me with one of these topics as we go along during this time, posted this on his Twitter feed this week. Don't be fooled by the lie. If you're not doing a lot, then you're not doing enough. That's brilliant. Don't be fooled by the lie that if you're not doing a lot, you're not doing enough. Don't focus on what you can't do. Determine what you can. Commit yourself to what matters. Know why you do what you do. And then as you go through life, you will figure out the how. Matthew Arnold said, truth sits on the lips of dying men. And to be candid with you, I have sat at the bedside of many a dying man. I have. It's part of what I do. Death is not an irregularity. It's almost a weekly engagement in my life. And I can tell you that rarely, in fact, never, have I ever had anyone say to me on their deathbed that more would have been better. More money, bigger business. You know, you just go down the things, all the mores. But I have always heard people tell me they wish that they had done less and they had been more. Done less and been more. And that's really what I want to challenge you to do today. I'm not trying to demotivate you. I'm not trying to distract you. I'm trying to tell you the folly of life is thinking that activity is productivity and helping you to turn that around so that you can focus your life on walking straight ahead and aligning your life with a sense of purpose and not thinking that everything has to be perfect for you to keep moving forward, because you can grow through the progress that you make when you set aside perfection and when you embrace a greater sense of principled living and the practices of discipline in your life. And when you focus your passion, be sure you don't lose your personhood and that you understand that the man that you are is the man that is always better, not when he does more, but when he does less that becomes the best in his life. I want to end this morning with a simple prayer in the book of Proverbs. A prayer here in the book of Proverbs. It's at the very end of the book. Proverbs 30, verse 7 and following says this. Two things I ask of you, Lord. Deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. That is, let's not live with nonsense. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of God. In a world that's lost its equilibrium, in a world that is marked by excesses and extremes, I just want our prayer to be, Lord, help me to live a balanced life. And then to let that life become a blessing to people around me. I'll see you next week. Thanks for being here today. Bless you.